Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property investing. Hello, mate.
G'day, buddy. How are you?
Good. Last minute research for a bit of Did You Know?
Just got a couple of pieces of paper with lots of stats on them, so I'll have to read this as we do the show. All professional here, mate. You know me.
Come on, mate. Don't lift the veil on this finely oiled machine that is the Property Couch.
It's Ferrari.
It's a
Ferrari, I reckon, fed with diesel.
Can you imagine the shambles this show would be without Ivis sort of tidying around the edges?
She'd go, come on, look at the time. Okay, yeah, we better start.
Yeah, so without her, we wouldn't get it up, and without us, there'd be nothing said.
True.
See, she even laughed quietly then. Yeah. All right, Q&A day.
Here we go, love Q&A.
Q&A day. Jeez, we haven't, felt like we've had some terrific guests over the last few weeks, Ivis, haven't we?
And are we going to do a bit of an announcement at the end of this one?
Yeah, stick around.
Stick around.
Mm.
Mm. Finally, that stuff that I keep talking about, this is one of them that's coming to fruition.
You've planted a seed for about 115 episodes, yeah. And now you're going to...
Finally, we're going to...
The listeners are now going to reap some of your sowing.
Potentially.
All right, well, there you go, folks. Stick around to the end. I think that'd be worth hanging around for. What, are you bringing back the sign-off or international sign-off?
No, we're not going there.
All right,
that was enough embarrassment.
Hey, our mindset minute theme today: three forces that shape character. Ben,
what are they?
Number one. Well, you didn't hear that either. Three forces that shape character.
Mm.
Number one: what you let in your mind.
Yes.
What you let in your mind, Ben.
Useful belief.
But also, we've said it a couple of times: don't sort of wake up to the 7 o'clock news. Because if you let that in your mind first thing in the day, you hear about the murders. So our podcast listeners already know this, Ben.
Oh, they just listen to us. In fact, if you're having trouble sleeping, just
listen to us. Exactly. So number one force that shapes character, Ivis, is what you let in your mind. Number two, what is it? Relationships. You are the average of the five people.
Can pick your friends, but you can't pick your relatives.
Correct. But if you ever think about this, I'm lucky because I'm surrounded. You two are in my top five.
Oh, top five.
So therefore.
Wait, this is a moment.
It is a moment. Brought to you by Kleenex. Here's the bad news for you guys, because I hang around with you.
Oh, now we're being chuffed.
Because I hang around you guys.
Is that a millisecond or 3 seconds? I think it was 3 seconds.
Because I hang around you guys, my average gets lifted, but on the flip side, your average goes down. So relationships, and number three, the habits you form. So Ben, how's the push-ups going?
Not too bad. Obviously, you're right with your pen there.
Yeah. Okay. Every week, she tells us not to drop a pen. Be careful when you put your glass down on the bench, because everyone can hear it. And then she goes and drops a pen.
So, push-ups, yes. Yeah. How are you going?
Mate, I haven't missed a day.
How's your guitar going?
That's probably not as good as the push-ups.
Well, all I need to do is look at your fingers and you don't have all of those, band-aids that you used to have.
Callous. Yeah, Joel asked me the same in the office yesterday. So, no, that could be better. So I could form better habits around that. So three forces that shape your character, Ben. Number one, what you let in your mind.
Mm.
Number two, the relationships you are, the average sum of the five people that you spend most time with. And number three, the habits you form. Motivation gets you started, but habit what keeps you going, man. So there you go.
Love it. Well done, mate. They're good ones.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Beautiful.
So today, Q&A day.
Q&A.
I will kick it off because it's a long question.
Yeah, and you're always better with those.
And you don't like reading the long question, so I'll read the long question.
I fall asleep with my own voice.
If you weren't here, if you didn't have to read it, you'd go home. All right, here we go. Hi, Ben and Bryce. This is from Kate. Thanks for such a great podcast. I've diligently listened from episode number one and it's taken me the best part of a year, but I finally caught up. Maybe if it's 1.5 speed, that might have helped.
Good.
I've loved the wealth of knowledge you have shared so freely. I especially like the guest speakers, particularly the great women you have had on your show.
Mm.
At the beginning of 2016 and after 9 years of university studies and a baby, I finally started full-time work. I was determined to teach myself how to manage money better. We always live from paycheck to paycheck, never leaving any rocks in the jar.
Mm.
You could say, here we go, this is for you, Ben. You could say we also did a couple of dumb things with our money.
Oh, well.
You called it?
You're not alone there, Kate. You're not alone.
Not alone. But you learn from these things, and that's how I found you and your podcast. and we are slowly turning a new leaf. In the last 12 months, we switched our dumb personal loan to a non-interest credit card. How do you want to ask?
Oh, that's good. Well, obviously you can keep switching credit cards at interest-free periods.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
Well, or Kate, let us know if there is such a thing that someone is going to give us free money. I think I'd be interested in that too.
I want to know about that. See, Ben, see, you just lifted the average. You just made straight onto it and have almost paid it down. We moved in with my parents for very cheap rent. We've managed to pay most of our debt. We got engaged.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. And we're now planning our wedding in November. Oh, and we are using the Money Smart system. You're going to talk a bit about the Money Smart system in a little while, Ben. But change is coming. My partner has been given an opportunity to start work in Newcastle. I work as a pharmacist for a public hospital and hope to transfer. We are looking forward to the move, which will enable us to get out of our parents' place and have a better work-life balance.
Mm.
I'm one of those Sydney people travelling an hour and a half to work each day, and it sucks when you have a 3.5-year-old.
Especially when the podcast only goes for about 45 minutes. I mean, you know.
Yeah, what are they going to do?
Got a bit of downtime.
That's actually caught up. I've heard in your podcast on several occasions Newcastle and the Central Coast being attractive places to invest.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the only way we could get into property was to become a rentvestor. But with this move, I wonder if it's possible to buy our first home with the intention of keeping it as an investment later on. Part A of the question, Ben. It goes on. My partner and I earn a combined gross income of roughly $130,000 annually. We have a small amount of savings, about $5,000, in bracket, remember we're getting married, but really nowhere near the amount needed for a deposit on our first home. Listening to your episode about guarantors got me thinking. Is it possible to borrow the full amount for an investment-grade property in Newcastle? Do banks really loan 105% with interest-only repayments so that we can continue putting money into an offset account? Or are we better to wait and rent and continue saving? My parents, we're getting towards the end, folks. My parents have been lucky enough to own a home in Sydney that has enjoyed crazy price growth. Their home would be worth at least 1.5 million at the moment. How long would my parents need to be guarantors? Would it be until we had saved 20% of the loan, perhaps in our offset account? Or would it be until the full amount was paid down? Mm. My dad is from the generation of debt is bad and avoid risks.
Mm.
If you thought this was a smart move, do you have any tips on how to explain the risk benefits to him so that he can understand? There's the family roast chat there. We would appreciate your thoughts on this. Yours in future wealth.
Oh, Kate, oh, nice.
Great sign off.
Yeah, fantastic. Maybe we should trademark that one.
I don't know.
Kate, okay, a couple of moving parts there. You will come across house and land package builders, developers, who have got some form of white label product that they've developed with a lender. Okay, to allow you to borrow 100% of the value of the home. So if you're thinking about that, you're thinking, well, that's good. I don't have to save up the deposit, you know. So, but be careful. Buyer beware. These new house and land packages are in areas where there's usually lack of scarcity, high supply, lots of vacant land. So the capital growth prospects on those particular properties aren't so great. Obviously, APRA, and the regulators are very cautious of people borrowing more than 90% at the moment, 95. The mortgage insurers who are playing in that space are also putting a premium on the risk profile in that particular area, given we're coming to the top of the cycle. Maybe we're at the top of the cycle now. So my advice when it comes to looking for lenders who outright lend to mum and dad or two borrowers or one borrower, be careful, okay, and you're going to pay a premium because the risk is higher. So I would steer clear of 100, 105% lending. However, the guarantee loan is, this is what we've been talking about. Remember, in the UK, 20% of people get help from their parents. In Australia, 3 to 4%. So the reality here is that if we can sit down with you or you sit down with a professional advisor and they explain the pros and cons and the risks associated with that, then effectively what happens is we take a limited guarantee against your parents' property at effectively 20%, 26% at the max, depending on how much you want to contribute. Now, you don't have a big deposit. You only have $5,000. You've got a wedding coming. So the reality in your case is you'll more than likely go with 106%, which means that you will cover the stamp duty costs, all of the settlement costs, and have that loan. Now, you own that loan. Okay, so your parents don't have to help service that loan. All they're doing is securing 26% of it. So as you were saying in your question before, as the value of your property grows, once ultimately the loan to value ratio gets to 80%, now that could be a combination of money that you have in your offset that you then decide to pay off the loan. We would potentially say if your parents aren't in any rush to have their second mortgage released or discharged, to try and continue to have a bit of a good buffer in your offset, and then watch the value of the property grow over time. And then when your loan to value ratio gets to maybe 70%, that's probably when you can exit out of it. But the fact of the matter is if nothing changes in your circumstances in terms of job security and being able to service the mortgage, and you don't make any further dumb decisions with money, then the reality is, and you can afford the loan, then the reality is that this is the perfect type of way in which parents can help their children get into the property market. I mean, because the alternative to that, Bryce, is what if I said to parents, don't help them, but the market's cooked and now property prices are going to be affected by 10% or 15% across the nation. Mm-hmm. And so your $1.5 million home is now going to be worth $1.35. Mm. That's not a good outcome that most parents would want in the value of their home. So the fact of the matter is, yes, the baby boomers have provided this country with the productivity and the education and the knowledge resource to allow this country to get to the position that it is today. And that is a good thing. Our standard of living is in the top five in the world. Our wealth per capita is in the top five in the world. We have a very, very wonderful place to live. And that's all built on wealth and better standard of living. So when we start playing with house prices, those types of things can be affected.
Yeah, very good point, Ben. I think, what tips to give dad? I think just reverse back to the fact that they're living with dad, they're about to get married, children or young babies in the house. Just say to him, unless you want us to live under your roof with a young child, you must do this.
Push him into a corner.
But just for the benefit of listeners, Ben, the mechanics of, because obviously she's got to explain it to her dad.
Yes.
So the mechanics of getting that guarantor loan are?
Well, effectively, you will need to sit down and look at your servicing, okay, to make sure that you can comfortably afford the full exposure, that 106%. If you can service that with the lender of choice, and remember, there are plenty of lenders who do guarantor loans. Now, that's what they need to do. Now, there needs to be a second conversation that you have with the guarantees in terms of the people who are making the guarantee for that security. Now, the bank will obviously need to value both properties. And in some cases, if it's the same bank that the parent might have a current mortgage with, then effectively, they'll take a standing mortgage against it. If it's a new bank, then what happens is that if there's an existing mortgage in place, the second mortgage goes in behind that. So the second bank, Bank B, needs to write to Bank A and ask them permission to take a second mortgage behind their first mortgage. They authorise that permission, and that basically sets up that tick in the box of the conditional approval. In terms of getting formal approval, it will be subject to the parents getting independent legal and financial advice. Now, the reason for that is that ultimately, there has been situations in the past where parental guarantors, I didn't know what I was getting into, I didn't know what I was signing. they go to the courts, and the courts are usually quite generous to people who are naive, and so the banks lose out. Mm. So that's the reason why the banks are saying, well, we've done everything possible. We've asked them to go and get their own advice to understand the obligation that they're going in. Because what's the obligation? The obligation is if something goes wrong in the relationship, if they can't service the loan, okay, then ultimately you've either got to pay the loan out or you've got to sell the property because the banks don't lose.
So it's effectively the parents giving the children a loan without having to cash flow it, isn't it?
Correct.
And it's not as if they're giving them, here's $100,000 and never get it back. The parents actually get it back. So, you'd be talking in those terms when you're having that sort of Sunday roast discussion with your dad, because it allows you to get into the market, it gives you a foothold into it, but it also means that if the parents are going to make a judgment around their character. Mm. I mean, if they're not a good credit risk, the parents are going to see that. But
look, if they don't want to go through all that rigmarole, the other things that some parents do is they then go and get a loan themselves, okay, and they service it on the income that they're earning. And so let's say they get a $60,000 loan, and then they give that money to the child, okay, and that forms part of the deposit to buy the house. Mm-hmm. Now, the kids potentially then start to service that loan. So they've just got an agreement internally between the family. This way, some go down that track. Obviously, some parents may have a very successful wealth strategy over their journey, and they might have cash. And when they do cash, effectively, they can give a gift. So it's a non-repayable gift traditionally. And when you get a non-repayable gift, it means that the kids don't have to show servicing on that that borrowing because effectively it's not a borrowed amount. They don't have to pay it back. Now, how is that supported? Usually through a statutory declaration that says that I'm giving my son, my daughter a non-refundable gift, so that then the bank says, okay, well, that forms part of the deposit. So there's lots of different ways we can do it. We've got on the website the fact sheet from a couple of the banks, or at least one of the banks I know, one of the banks I'm getting told by. So have a look at that, and that's pretty consistent with most of the bank offerings. But just remember, you want it to be a limited guarantee, not a complete guarantee. Okay, the limited guarantee is just in the exposure against that portion of equity that you're accessing in the family, in the parents, or, and it doesn't have to be parents, it can actually be a family member, it could be a brother, it could be a sister, you know, so in that case, some lenders allow you to go uncles, aunties, those types of things, so within the family unit.
Very good, Ben. So there you go, Kate. Hopefully that helps. Good luck with the wedding later on. And
just also Newcastle. We'll probably comment around Newcastle.
Yeah, I had a quick look at that. I didn't know if she was asking whether it was a good place to invest or not. But yeah, absolutely. It's, you know,
it's a balanced type investment. We would say it's going to have growth periods, but it's also going to have a, you know, depending, because it's still relatively affordable, the rents are still pretty reasonable. So you get a better yield in that market, but it's more of a balanced type strategy, which in their case, given obviously they're going to effectively get married, so they're going to have some one-off costs for their wedding, you're probably looking for something that sort of helps pay for itself as well.
Yep.
So, you know, that's about looking at cash flows.
No, very comfortable with Newcastle as a location.
So, all right, here we go. Next question from Warren. Hi, Couches. Thank you for your entertaining, informative and thought-provoking podcast. I'd like to know what your thoughts are on rescuing a situation where someone has an investment property they've had for 10 years that isn't performing. Cut the losses and look to replace it or hang on to it. I bought this place at the age of 20 and on apprentice wages. It was all I could afford at that time. Thanks. Now the specifics, paid 195, current market value 240, currently rented for 270 a week.
Wow. Okay, that's a good one. Just so you know, I've got a property in my portfolio that's that hasn't performed well on a growth capacity, Ben, but it's performed very well on a yield capacity.
Yep.
So if you have a look at that, what was it, 270 a week? Divide that by 240.
240 val.
That's 5.85%, Ben. Like, I'd be stoked to find something with 5.85% because I think it's a revisiting of the definitions around the types. There's three broad categories that are probably can fit in: a growth asset, a balanced asset, or a yielding asset. And generally, a portfolio to retire out the debt needs some yielding. So we've got a view that we don't sell properties lightly. So it really would be about better understanding what the bigger picture is for you, Warren. But on the information that you've given us, I would suggest that they could do some real heavy lifting with yield in the portfolio, and just means the next one, depending on your cash flow story, would be a growth asset. So I'm thinking not to cut the losses at this stage.
Yeah, look, and that's a broad statement that Bryce is making, because effectively just on that, but if we actually find it in an area where we absolutely feel as if the job and the economy is sluggish, then the reality for most people, and this is why asset selection and location selection is so important, because we obviously, he's got a missed opportunity in the equity that's being built, so he can't release the equity out quickly, and that equity is then slowing him down from getting into his next purchases. So there is absolutely an opportunity cost in this case. Now, when we see clients with several properties in their portfolio and they've got something like this, that's a little cash cow, that's going to do its thing. But if it's slowing you down, then you've got to get down to the specifics of the location and also the type of property it is. And in some cases, we would turn that around and say, yes, we'd do analysis on it and say, look, the opportunity cost is, if we were to buy in this location performing at this level, that should cover its cost. In other words, it should be a better investment in, say, 3.7 years or 8.2 years or whatever, and then the client can then make an informed decision around that. So from our point of view, we would want to know more about the actual property and where it's located.
Exactly, and it doesn't have anything to do with the current debt level here as well. But you know, ultimately it's in front in value. And, you know, we've always talked about if you sell a property, the next one is under enormous pressure to deliver just to break even. Warren, why don't you send us in a bit more detail about the location, the current debt, and we might be able to do a follow-up.
We'll be able to look after you.
Very good. Thank you, Warren. All right, Ben. Hi, Ben and Bryce. Love your podcast and listen to every episode. The fact that you help educate your viewers about property investing and household cash flow is a testament to your knowledge and wisdom. I'd appreciate your insight into the following. My partner and I recently bought a duplex, two bed, one bath, two living, 475 square meters in Spearwood for $400. Now, Ben, Spearwood?
WA?
WA, that's where my sister lives.
Oh, okay. So, very good.
We have $112,000 in equity in the property and $73,000 in our offset.
Mm-hmm.
Our salaries are $50,000 per annum for my partner and $71,000 for myself. And we do not plan to have children for another 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
There is an opportunity to buy the second duplex, also two bed, one bath with a small granny flat at the back for $385,000. The site is owned R40 on 950 square metres. We see a four property potential. 3 kilometres from the new Port Coogee Marina, which is just just south of Fremantle, and the potential for South Fremantle Power Station development. You're familiar with that area?
Yeah. Actually, every time I drive past that power station, that old derelict power station, I think that would be an amazing place to have a rave party. If you think about if you Google it, everyone, it's just this big, massive...
I was not expecting that. I thought you were going to say, imagine turning that into warehouse apartments or something. I'm thinking, right on. I was not expecting that.
Well, because it's grungy and the whole thing. I holiday in Western Australia every second year, and Jane's grandmother is based in Fremantle, and we holiday down at Shoalwater. So ultimately, that drive up all the time, I just see this massive old power station. I think, man, that you could have some parties in there or something like that. Because you wouldn't disturb anyone because it's in the middle of nowhere.
Old Captain 1971, you know what the young people do at rave parties these days, don't you? You wouldn't fit in, mate. Just sitting there with your pie and chips.
What are you talking about? What don't they just
turn
dance?
Turn the footy up a bit louder.
Don't they just dance? Isn't that all they do?
Mate, they just dance, that's right. we used to go fish and chips down at that
little
right
spot.
Next to
it's cracker.
Yeah. Anyway, we digress.
We do.
Just a touch.
So who are we helping here?
That's right. This is back to Daniel's question. We are 300 metres from the local shopping and 5 kilometres from the satellite employment hub of Fremantle, in brackets, Bryce's old hood. It ticks all the lifestyle boxes, bar being near a train station, but it's not far away, and is currently challenging to access the freeway to the Perth CBD. My two-part question is, one, I am currently weighing up the opportunity cost. What is your inference of Spearwood as a potential wave rider suburb piggybacking off growth of the coastal development? Do you feel that it would have long-term consistent growth followed by a flattening capital growth and thus be better to buy in a blue chip area? B, as a first-time investor, would it be wise to buy the adjacent duplex and land bank the asset, then develop the land after we've acquired several more properties in our portfolio, or focus on the subdivision right off the bat? Love the book. Keep up the great works, guys. And here we go. Go Freo.
Oh, gee.
P.S.
I always thought there was something wrong here.
P.S. It's apologies for the detailed response. Kind regards, Dr. Dan.
Dr. Dan. Okay. So
I'll go Spearwood. Spearwood's actually full of, a lot of Italian families, working class families. But it is really close to the beach. It's close to Fremantle. And from
Got elevation.
Parts of it does. And as you go over the top of Stock Road, and for the non-Perth people, we're getting a bit specific here. But I actually like it because it's got old blocks that people are actually that people are subdividing.
Yep.
And it's highly built up, good schools, and you can get to the freeway. You know, when he's talking about Port Coogee, it is a bit far away from the freeway, but Spearwood's pretty close. So I don't mind Spearwood as a suburb. I would be quite comfortable with that, with the big size blocks, particularly if you want to do something. The second part, Ben, is, you know, apples into apple pie.
Yeah, do we buy? Well, I think that's exactly right. Apples into apple pie. I mean, I would like to know with the granny flat on the back exactly what sort of rent they would think they'd be able to get.
Mm.
But like anything, this will always trump the passive investor. You know, if you own one of them and this then gets you to control the block and you could put four on it and it's sort of covering its own costs, it's a bit of a no-brainer in terms of just you know, making sure. And you may not even do that for 10, 15, 20 or 30 years. I mean, I would normally do my developments when the market's moving. So when at the moment I wouldn't be doing any, you know, because you're just not going to get your return. Now the argument for that is your builders are going to come cheaper, so your cost per square meter of build is going to be less because there's lots of you know, sort of tradies who are looking for work. But the reality for me is, if they're both in good condition, you could sit on these for 10 or 15 years. Because for me, Perth has still got to find its feet. It's still got to get its mojo back, and we're probably still a while away from that for happening. Obviously, incomes over there are still very good. But once that confidence comes through, because we all know it's a beautiful place to live, that Coogee Beach development is coming along nicely. The marina place down there, I went for a walk down there at Christmas. It's definitely coming along. You've got the Fremantle Doctor that wanders in there every afternoon. It blows you off your feet.
And you don't get the old the smell that used to come from the Desonia sort of small goods factory that's no longer there anymore. Which
correct.
Is good.
So that whole coastline has real potential to be developed. And I think if you're playing the long game, that whole area is going to be all right. So unfortunately, we got this email back in January, but we get a lot of Q&A, a hell of a lot. So we'd love to hear from you, Daniel, in terms of whether you did, Dr. Dan, if you did buy it, because we would have thought, without knowing the actual specifics of the property and that, we would have thought you probably should have grabbed it.
Yeah, and a full disclosure, my sister does have investment properties in that suburb, so I'm inside, don't want to be manipulating them.
No, but
she bought the family home in Spearwood back in, let me quickly think this through, 1999. No, actually, my brother-in-law had owned it for about five or seven years prior with his brothers and sister.
Yep.
And then my sister and he bought them out. I don't think they mind me telling this story. And then they live.
Have you been got permission?
Oh, yeah, I've got permission, so it's just between us guys.
Don't tell
my sister. Although Braden, who listens, is a friend of my sister, so I could sort of go there.
Brad, if you're listening, we'll know where it came from.
Braden. So they lived in it for 10 or 15 years, and then they've now built three duplex on it, and it's worked out wonderfully well for
them. There we go.
So there you go.
A nice little equity harvest opportunity there to grab. This is from Tristan. Tristan, hi guys, love the show. I binge listen in the car as I drive a lot for work. My wife actually calls it an obsession. Oh, well, that's a nice obsession to have. Thank you.
Braden's wife says the same about him.
I love real estate and devour any information I can get my hands on. I'm in a bit of a bind and require some help. I currently have four properties. Good for you. Principal place of resident, a house in country Victoria in Nathalia that my father rents. A house in Frankston that has had just off interest 10% growth in 5 months. So, you know, there's a living in that. And the front house on a subdivider block in Seaford. The last two properties, however, were purchased with friends as tenants in common.
Dun dun.
Do you know where this is going? I wanted to try and get another property with just my wife. And so, as my friend has changed his plans a bit, which is always what happens, I spoke to a well-regarded mortgage broker and they told me that the banks have changed the rules and that now that they will take the full loan amounts of the split properties and only half the rent. This destroys my serviceability. I'm now not sure what to do. My friend is moving interstate and will not be ready to buy again for 2 years. I think it might turn out more like 5 years, and I'm keen to keep purchasing. Should I concentrate on paying down the debt of my principal place of residence, 280K, and the property's worth 750, or look at selling one of the joint houses to gain the serviceability? My mind is spinning. Any advice you could give me would be greatly appreciated.
That's a very good cautionary tale here, Ben. I've actually been caught up in this. The first property I bought, I've said it before, I bought it in partnership with someone else, and I was joint and severally liable for the entire debt despite only drawing in half of the rent. So the reason it's a cautionary tale is because everyone likes to get into partnerships with people in property.
Mm-hmm.
But in my experience, the best partnerships to buy property with are spousal, life partners, people are sharing the life agenda together versus mates and friends. So I'm not saying don't do it, but this is a classic case of what happens if you do it and it doesn't go as you plan, because there's two life agendas here that have gone down divergent roads. So
if you're investing, because look, remember we talk about investing. Investing is long term. Speculating or trying to equity harvest is short term. So if you're doing something short term and there's an end game and there's an agreement in place and there's a 5-year termination, then you've got enough. you've got enough visuals on that short term. But in this case, guess what? Someone's changed their mind.
Yeah, so it just depends on the rules of engagement that they set up at the beginning, Ben. But, it does. You know, you've got to, if you want to do this, you want to have the 5 or 10 year outlook. And if someone wants to get out early, you've got a right to maybe buy them out at the original purchase price because it's going to affect their strategy. So,
so the reality is he will most likely have to get out of these two deals. Mm. And that so if they haven't performed well, if we've paid stamp duty, this is the classic case of red ink on the page because of understanding the risks versus the rewards. So everyone feels like, let's do this as a joint venture. If you're going to do a joint venture, get online, go to one of those law websites and download a buy-sell agreement. Mm. So people know exactly what you're going into. So everyone knows the rules of engagement. That's the best way to do it, but you're absolutely right. Now, there are a couple of lenders that a good mortgage broker should ask about. Now, I must admit, in the last 2 or 3 months with all of these changes, I haven't kept up to speed with what happens about some of these lenders who were servicing based on the person's exposure. So in other words, they were separating the joint and several liability and only servicing on the person's. But I just think with APRA and ASIC sort of looking over the dashboard at the likes of responsible lending, that probably might be wound in a little bit. Mm. So whereas we know we could do them, earlier this year, we could definitely do when they were in a joint relationship and they were several in joint liabilities, we were able to service on that individual liability. So go back to your broker and ask for them to do a ring around to confirm that you can't service it. Mm. Right, and that's not just for our good friend Tristan, but it's also for anyone who is in this predicament, because I'll give you some names of some banks that I did know did it. So CBA and AMP. Okay, so there you go. We did know that they were separating that liability. Those credit laws may have changed.
Mm.
So yeah, good just one. FYI. A
couple of things. I did a video on tenants in common, joint tenants, the difference.
Yes,
spent.
Good point.
I'm looking at Ivis. Are we going to send that out, Ivis? Yes, we will. Yep.
Where's where's
it going to be? On Facebook or something? Website. It'll be on the website. The Property Couch.
Website.
We've got a website. Huh. What is it?
Property Couch.
Yeah.
The Property Couch. Let's just Google the Property Couch.
ThePropertyCouch.com.au. And hey, my cousin bought a property. I'm telling all the family business here.
Oh, no. Without any of their permission.
Yeah. But with a put and call option. Because have you seen one before?
Yep.
Because it was they wanted to enter into the contract after. So they entered into the deal last month. But the put and call means that they transact in July for capital gains tax purposes.
So it's an option to buy?
It's an option
call. It's an options contract.
Yes.
Put and call.
Yep.
So beautiful.
That was nice.
Good so there you go. There's another way of looking at property, especially with all of these changes around.
So for the benefit of a put call, put is the option to sell, a call is the option to buy. You've got the option, but you don't have to exercise it.
Yeah, there might be amount of money that you forego. So.
Yeah, there's an option fee.
Yep.
So, but the way they locked it in is the seller has the put and the buyer has the call, so then they've locked it on both sides.
Beautiful.
But because if they enter into a contract prior to the 30th of June, it's a capital gains tax event for the seller in this financial year.
Mm-hmm.
So they did it so that they could lock it in, took it off the market, sold, done and dusted, but they transact in the next financial year.
So the contract of sale will have the new financial year's date on it.
Absolutely.
There we go. And that's obviously what triggers the
So there you go. My whole family's affairs have been fully exposed now. So
fantastic. How many did we get through then?
Four?
Four. Jeez. Look, time flies when we're having fun.
Right.
What do we got? What's next?
I don't know, mate. Rumour has it that you're about to tee off.
Oh, am I allowed to do call and bull dust?
I don't know. It's your segment.
Ooh, I'm going to call bull dust on school banking programs for kids. Savings accounts for kids. I mean...
What a bully, mate.
I know.
You don't want to save any money for your kids.
I know. It's just terrible, geez. Isn't it? I get my little piggy bank and, it's all good. I get my little statements here and they get you in and they like it.
I can see them picketing out the front of the office now, mate, the little kids.
And I earn my bugger all interest. So it's just not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So what I say to people who I sit down with and we have a look at their financial situation and I say, you're giving some money across to the kids? Oh, yeah, we want to build, teach them about money. Great, okay. Where are you putting the money? Oh, just putting it into their little accounts. And like, well, how much is in there? Oh, $3,000 or $4,000. I'm like, that's fantastic. What, are you saving that up for their education? Yeah, that's really good. I said, so why are you putting in an account that's earning a below par return? You know, they might be earning, say, 2-2.5%. Put it in your offset.
Oh.
Put it in your offset, people.
So what are you saying? They're breaking the Money Smart system by doing that.
Put it in your offset and run a spreadsheet. So because there are so many people that don't have a spreadsheet, Bryce, we're making a spreadsheet. We're making a spreadsheet.
I was just
making a spreadsheet. But it's pretty simple. All right, we're going to teach you how to do it. We'll just put a date in how much you said you were going to give them, but you keep the money in the offset, right? So if it is $500, if it's $1,000, you just know that if you've got $10,000 in your offset,
$9,500 is yours,
and $500's for the little kids. Johnny's.
Yeah.
So it just... crazy, because remember, money in the offset is earning you whatever interest you're paying on your mortgage. So it's crazy to have these separate bank accounts. Just have a spreadsheet.
So is that like a 6.5% turnaround? Because you're losing 4.5% saving and paying 2.5% income.
Well, roughly. It's probably about 4% difference at the moment. Mm. Because yeah, you are going to earn some income in terms of interest on that. Now, you can teach the kids when they get a little bit older in terms of the value of money by introducing them to the Money Smarts program and how to earn money and look after it. But I just, it's crazy that even if it's $500, it doesn't sound like a lot.
Mm.
But building up every night, that $500 is saving you interest on your mortgage.
Mm.
And as opposed to growing very, very slowly.
Mm.
So keep all of that money in there. Same with holiday funds. Same with, you know, like people have these little Christmas funds and they have their holiday fund. Now, if you've got multiple offsets that can link to one account, then put it in little Johnny's name, put it in the holiday account name. We're happy for that. But if you don't have that, just set up a spreadsheet. And then every time you said you were going to give little Johnny $10, you put the $10 into the spreadsheet. We can help you calculate the interest. We'll give you a little interest calculation so you can calculate the interest as well. And you'll know exactly what little Johnny will have when he gets to 18 or 21, or when you want to kick into that to buy him his bike or his education, whatever it may be. But it just does not make sense to have these savings accounts, these kids' savings accounts. And that's how the banks lock you in, kids. Okay, right. And parents, don't get locked into it. All the school programs, I've got one in front of me, little piece of paper, and I look, it's like it's a six-page program of how wonderful...
Look at all the colours and all the cartoons, you know, and the characters.
I'm going to get a couple of little gifts as well. Lock me in, kids, because that's hundreds of millions of dollars across Australia that the bank is then lending out and making big money on. Don't do it. There's ball dust right there, Bryce, right there.
We've heard you, mate. We've heard you. Mate, so
was I passionate enough?
You were. Mate, I just think that the little kids across Australia now are probably just downing their pickets. So I thought you had it in for them.
You've
but you're actually trying to look out
the money.
For them.
You've taken out
the money. Mate, very good tip. So there you go, folks. Do not deviate from the Money Smart system. It's a spreadsheet, Ibis. Did you know that that's what you were up to this afternoon?
Yeah, we're going to build a little spreadsheet to calculate interest, the whole lot.
I like it, mate. Well done. Well done. So I'm going to do a life hack today.
Good. Whilst you do that, can I look up my did you know?
Yeah, there's your did you know. My life hack is very simple. It's along lunches, right? So here's what I do. Do you know those little, I bought 10 of those, I know this is going to intrigue you.
Mm-hmm.
I bought 10 of those little glass bowls that are about that big, and I know it doesn't work on podcasts, demonstrating how big it is.
How big is it, Bryce?
It's what's at a diameter 10 of centimetres. 10 centimetres, right?
Yep.
So that's, it's a lunch size, right?
Yep.
And then I go and buy, Ibis, a kilo of chicken
of
mince.
Of grass. You'd have to buy that.
Yeah.
Thought you just,
yeah,
don't
no,
you
I'd
harvest
just,
that?
I'd go out the front for that. Kilo chicken, and then a kilo...
Chilo chicken.
I've got it in
chilo,
here, mate.
Is that a kilo or is that a different type of chook?
Mate, I'm trying to cut time here. Chilo is a kilo of chicken. Everyone knows that.
There's a word.
So a chilo.
A chilo. Beautiful.
Of chicken and a kilo of lamb or beef.
Yep.
And then I just make, I throw in all the veggies, the stock, the ghee, all that sort of stuff. On
veggies.
One Sunday afternoon.
You eat meat and veg.
Mate, you're not going to let this go, are you?
Sorry.
Hey? And then I build ice. I'll talk to you, all right? I'll get some sense out of you. And then I freeze them, and I put them. I've got this little warmer in the office here, and I know you're ready to hook in on that because at 11 o'clock, without fail, I go and turn it on.
Oh, this man's regimented.
Then I have lunch every day for costs it would be about $4 a day. Oh. Right? But I am got slow release food and it is working really, really well. So then everyone says to me, you know what everyone says to me? They go, oh, don't you get a bit bored with that? Well, I alternate it, right? But then as they say that, they say it to me 3 days in a row, eating the same bread roll with the same salad and the same ham in it. Mm. And they're looking at me going, don't you get bored with that? No, because food, there's 21 major meals in a week.
21? And
about four of them, yeah, you skip breakfast, so it's probably not that many for you. About 4 to 6 of them for the average person is for pleasure, and the remaining are for sustenance. So I just sustain myself with those remaining, and then I go out on the weekend and I have fun. So there's my life hack, Ben.
So your entree is that the grass? No.
Do you know, we laugh, right? But do you know, Dean comes up to me in the office the other day, and he goes, Bryce, and he starts talking about bacon, and then he looked at me strange. He goes, oh, actually, you don't eat bacon. And I said, what? Mate, I love bacon. I eat that much bacon. He goes, oh, I just thought you ate veggies. I thought, that Kingsley. Everyone thinks that I just eat grass. Mate, I eat more protein than probably the average person eats.
So, because for me, you know, if I'm cooking a bit of steak on the barbie, right, and I, you know that smell? And the saliva in your mouth. Oh, it's just magic, you know. You just get that anticipation. In fact, you want to rip it off there and just start. You've got to sample it as the chef too, don't you? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not done yet. Oh, by the time you actually take it off, half of it's eaten, right? So I get this amazing feeling. Do you do that when you mow the lawn?
Mate,
that feeling when you mow the lawn? Do you like that grass, that fresh grass smell?
Did you see that, listeners? Unprovoked. Even you've got Ivis on your side.
Of course, this is all in fun. No. We know Bryce.
Many
is,
true words said.
I'll be dead by 55. Lucky to probably get there by then because, you know, I'm eating all this wonderful food.
That's if I don't get blown away in the next strong wind.
No, it's right. we all do it in jest, Bryce. It's fabulous food and I'm just jealous. That's what it is.
Life hack, folks. Just do that. Just give it a go. I pull it out in the morning and it serves me very well, Ben. And it serves my money smart system very, very well. So, mate, what about you? Did you know?
Did you know? Okay, so our great friends at CoreLogic, okay, these are great people. They do lots of research on property and they embarked on a research on housing affordability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because obviously the topic of the day. So I thought I'd bring it up. So they surveyed 2010 Australians aged between 18 and 64 across Australia with their good friends at Galaxy Research.
Okay.
Now, what did we find? In terms of living situation, basically home ownership increased with household income. In other words, the higher the income, the more people own homes. Pretty logical, right? Mm-hmm. 51% of respondents said they currently own property. Okay, so they're property owners, 51%. 12% have previously owned property but no longer own property. So maybe they've divested, accessed their cash for super, what it may be. 37% have never owned property. Now, the interesting one here, and we can understand why the millennials are a bit, you know, vertically challenged in this space in regards to getting on the property ladder, 60% of millennials obviously don't currently own property.
Mm.
That's because most of them are obviously still building their skills up and studying, so they've got a little bit of a run-up, and we also know that it's going to take longer to obviously be able to save up for that deposit, hence talk to your folks. 62% of respondents believe housing affordability is worse now than it was a year ago. So that's that mindset that's sort of going on. 58% believe next year will be even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, so that's come off 4%, but I actually think that the market's probably hit its peak. 87% of non-profit property owners are concerned about the ability to afford their first or next home. So it's a big story.
Mm.
All right, but are we willing to let the value of property go down to let these people in? That's the million-dollar question. And 76% of property owners are concerned to some extent, at least, about being able to afford what they want for their next home. So this is that upsizing. Mm. So when you start off, but I get on the property ladder, buy that one-bedroom apartment, build up to then a two-bedroom, then eventually, get a house and then build, that's what you got to do. It's right. Just not easy to do to walk into a $2 million property.
So what are you saying? You just got to do what your grandparents did? Just start from the bottom of the property ladder and work your way up.
So there's more data there from our friends. If you wanted to find that, just go to CoreLogic Housing Affordability and you'll be able to download that information if it's of interest to you.
Oh, mate, you've been on fire today. What did you have for brekkie? Seriously?
You... I'm actually a bit crook. So, you know, when I go to crook, the wires in the brain just go a little bit out.
Mate, I haven't seen you that up and about since Collingwood got beaten in 2000. Very good. Mate, very good. So, a couple of quick ones.
Yep.
You can go to the website and get that video that we talked about where I did the tenants in common.
Yes.
Which is great. You teased a little bit.
I did, at the start.
At the start.
So we're there now.
A project that we've been very excited to do. A collaboration between your good self.
Yes.
Jeremy Shepherd.
Yes.
The founder of DSR Data and myself.
Yes.
Bringing a research platform to the marketplace, which we think is going to just revolutionise where to buy investment grade properties.
Yeah, so we are announcing the name.
I was going to let you do that. You're not
going to do that? Okay.
Yep.
It's called Location Score.
Mm.
Okay. Woo! Location Score, and I even know the URL.
Do you?
Locationscore.com.au.
Oh, mate.
So it's coming soon. We're in the final stages of working it all out. But what we want to do is you can register.
Yeah, so if they go to locationscore.com.au, Ben, a couple of things. They can leave their details so that we can let them know as soon as it becomes available.
Yes.
But also, because we're just about to hit the green button, we want to make sure that we've covered absolutely everything. There's an invitation there for people to go there and tell us the top two questions they have when it comes to researching investment grade properties, so that we can make sure we've absolutely covered every single thing we need to. So it's an audience participation.
It is.
Locationscore.com.au. Go there, leave your details, and leave those two questions, and we will go through them, Ben, and we will make sure we've covered 100% of the things that people need, because we see this as being a game changer for people deciding which suburbs they should be investing in.
And next week, we've got Jeremy on the show.
We do.
So we're going to go through the variables. So the concept behind this was that we've obviously got, you know, lots of listeners. We want to help the marketplace. There is a cost to this. This is costing us a lot of money to develop and build. So there will be a small charge. So I just want everyone to understand that. But what it's going to do is drive you into areas where demand is exceeding supply, based on 8 very, very cool variables that we analyze and score, hence location score. And it's all about finding areas and avoiding bad areas. But more about that on next week's show.
Next week's show, locationscore.com.au, folks. There you go. And if you are into social media, at the Property Couch, at Bryce Holdaway, at Ben Kingsley with an AU, unless you want to find out about the Academy Awards that the other one won.
Ben, yes.
Join us. Come and introduce yourself. Come and say g'day, because we'd love to chat to you. So, Ben, Q&A day. We haven't been there for a while, but it's been fun to be back.
We love doing it. 3 weeks ago, I think, was our last one. Yep.
There you go, folks. So keep those questions coming in. We will. We're going to do a Facebook Live coming up too, Ivis, before the end of the financial year.
This is how organised we are. We're like, what are we doing? Oh, we'll do something here.
She gives me that look, though, but she planted the seed before we went on air. So,
anyway, we've got to let people go.
We've got to let people go.
Back to their day.
There you go. All right, folks. Until next week, Kingsley.
See you, mate.
See ya. Later.